Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Growing up in the 1850s, The Journal of Agnes Lee is a historical diary drawn from the writings of Eleanor Agnes Lee, the fifth child of Robert E. Lee and Mary Anna Randolph Custis Lee. Agnes began the journal in December 1852, when she was 12, and continued it intermittently for about 5 years. But, edited by Mary Custis Lee DeButts, the volume presents a young person record of family life, schooling, visiting, religion, illness, travel, and social expectation within an elite antebellum Virginia household. Its purpose is not to provide a comprehensive political history of the decade before the Civil War, but to preserve a personal record that reveals how a girl in the Custis Lee family understood her daily world. The book is especially valuable because it combines youthful immediacy with later family recollections and contextual material on Arlington House, allowing readers to see both the private texture of Agnes Lee experience and the historical setting surrounding it. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a young diarist records ordinary life before it became historical evidence. The central value of growing up in the 1850s lies in the fact that Agnes Lee did not write as a historian. She wrote as a schoolgirl and adolescent, noting visits, weather, lessons, family movements, religious duties, social calls, celebrations, and personal moods. This makes the journal useful in a different way from memoirs composed after the Civil War, because its entries are not shaped primarily by retrospective explanation. The details may seem modest, but they reveal what counted as important to a girl of her class and age. Ordinary events become evidence of rhythms of domestic time, patterns of sociability, and the emotional vocabulary available to a young Southern woman in the 1850s. The sporadic nature of the journal also matters. It prevents the book from becoming a complete chronology, but it preserves the unevenness of youthful attention. Agnes wrote when she felt moved to write, and that unevenness helps readers distinguish between what modern historians might seek and what a child in that household actually chose to record. The result is an intimate source whose strength is its limited personal scale. Secondly, the Lee household appears through family intimacy rather than public mythology because Agnes Lee was the daughter of Robert E. Lee. Many readers approach the journal expecting direct insight into a major historical figure. The book does provide glimpses of Lee family relations, but it does so through domestic proximity rather than political argument or military narrative. Robert E. Lee appears primarily as father and household presence, filtered through the affection and assumptions of a daughter. This perspective is important because it shifts attention away from the public image of command and toward the interpersonal life of a prominent Virginia family before the war. The journal also situates Agnes among siblings, cousins, visitors, and extended kin, showing how family identity was maintained through correspondence, travel, visiting, and shared memory. At the same time, the source requires careful reading. A daughter view is affectionate and partial, and it naturally emphasizes loyalty, familiarity, and emotional attachment. The book is therefore not a corrective biography of Robert E. Lee, but a record of how his family world looked from within. Its contribution is the domestic framing of a family later absorbed into national memory. Thirdly, girlhood, schooling, and social training in an elite antebellum setting. Agnes Lee Journal is especially useful for understanding the transition from childhood to young womanhood in a privileged Southern household. Her entries reflect a world in which education, manners, piety, family obligation, and social presentation were closely connected. Lessons and reading were not isolated activities. They formed part of a broader training in refinement and self-command. Visits, churchgoing, correspondence, dress, conversation, and movement between households help teach a young woman how to occupy her expected social position. The journal does not usually analyze these expectations directly, which makes the evidence more revealing. Agnes records them as normal features of life, not as abstract rules. This allows readers to see how gender roles were absorbed through routine rather than formal instruction alone. The book also shows the emotional complexity of such training. Agnes could be lively, observant, dutiful, affectionate, and sometimes frustrated, suggesting that elite girlhood was structured but not emotionally flat. Compared with institutional histories of education or gender, this diary offers a smaller but more textured view of how social formation operated in daily practice. Fourthly, Arlington House and its garden function as family memory as well as setting, the volume gains depth from its connection to Arlington House, the Custis Lee family home. Agnes Lee Journal places domestic life within a recognizable physical and social environment, while the additional recollections and historical note help readers understand why the house and grounds carried such emotional weight for the family. The garden, in particular, appears not only as scenery, but as a site of childhood memory, family continuity, and attachment to place. This matters because antebellum elite identity was often rooted in houses, landscapes, inherited associations, and the rituals performed within them. Arlington was not merely a backdrop for events. It helped organize the family's sense of belonging. Later history transformed Arlington into a national site associated with war, memory, and loss, but the journal preserves an earlier household perspective. Readers encounter the place before that transformation is complete, through the everyday associations of children and relatives. The book, therefore, invites a layered reading of place. It shows Arlington as home, as inherited symbol, and as a location whose later public meaning can obscure the private attachments once invested in it. Lastly, the journal is valuable partly because of what it does not explain. One of the most important ways to read growing up in the 1850s is to notice its limits. Agnes Lee wrote during a decade of intensifying national conflict, yet the journal is not primarily concerned with sectional politics. Readers seeking direct commentary on the crisis leading to the Civil War may find the absence striking. That silence does not make the journal historically useless. Instead, it reveals the boundaries of a young diarist attention and the insulated quality of elite domestic life as recorded within the family circle. The book also does not function as a full social history of the antebellum South. It presents one viewpoint from a prominent household, not a balanced account of all groups who lived in or around that world. This limitation is analytically important. Diaries preserve perception, not completeness. They show what a writer noticed, what seemed worth recording, and what remained unspoken. For historians and general readers, the journal is strongest when treated as a partial source. Its omissions encourage questions about class, race, politics, and memory that the text itself may not answer directly. In conclusion, growing up in the 1850s is best suited for readers interested in diaries, antebellum domestic life, women and girlhood in 19th century America, the Lee family, or the social world surrounding Arlington House. It will be less satisfying for readers who want a broad political history of the 1850s or a comprehensive account of the coming of the Civil War. Its practical and intellectual benefit is the way it teaches readers to work with a personal document. Agnes Lee observations show how historical meaning can be found in routines, visits, family letters, schooling, religion, and emotional expression. The book also helps readers recognize the difference between private memory and public history, especially because the Lee family later became so symbolically important. Compared with many Civil War-related books, this volume stands out because it looks before the war and from inside a young woman's everyday world rather than from the battlefield. The Cabinet, or the retrospective memoir. Compared with more general studies of Southern society, it is narrower but more immediate. Its distinctiveness lies in that combination of youthful voice, prominent family context, and domestic detail. Read carefully, it offers not a complete portrait of the antebellum South, but a revealing fragment of how one elite Virginia girl experienced it. If you would like to support Agnes Lee, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.